ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I have Jason Cardney, the author of Great on Paper and Shh. On grass. I'm not going to leave the explicit out of it, but this episode is all based on this book. He is the most controversial, I believe, youth author right now for how to correct our ever-going youth soccer program. And if you're looking for a guidance of a blueprint, this is pretty stinking good. He doesn't hold back. He's honest. He's forthright with it all. Before I say any more, I'm going to say, let's start this chat and head to the pit.
My name is Jason Cardney. I'm from Bolton in England. Moved to the US in 2003. I spent all my life playing, obsessed with the game, loved the game. And then I realized at some point I'm going to have to stop playing. And then I thought that I can't be not involved in the game. So when I was young, 23, 24, started coaching, started taking my licenses. And when I was 26, I was lucky enough to be hired by Preston North End. And I worked there for 6 years. Had a great time. It was a great foundation. Learned a lot. Coaching there fit in with the values of who I am and how I act. So it was a great education for me and a great time. And in 2003, I moved over here to the US Lived in Virginia for 5 years, just coaching, just for fun. And I also had a day job, so it wasn't like my full-time thing. But still loved it, still wanted to try and get back into the pro game. But moved to Portland in 2008 with my wife. She's from Seattle. Ended up coaching at FC Portland, where I'm at now. Got a little bit disgruntled with youth soccer in the US and how it was run, and there didn't seem to be some kind of development plan. And I was coaching kids at 16 that had been at clubs for 8 years to 10 years, and they were still not very good at it, and they didn't have an understanding of the game. So I retired for a couple of years, and then in 2019, I was lucky enough to be hired by FC Portland as the director of coaching. So I'm still there. So I've been there since 2019, doing it full time, and I love it, trying to obviously help people understand the why of you should be playing youth sports, and helping coaches to get better and all row in the same direction. That's important to me. That was important to me as a player. And as a player, I always seemed to be more successful when I was sat in a locker room with humble guys that understood what teamwork was. So that fit in with my culture of who I am. So I've tried to create that at FC Portland, and yeah, I've been doing it for 6 years, and we're progressing nicely, but I still feel like I've just scratched the surface on what I want. I think society is fighting back against what I believe in. So I just feel like I've scratched the surface, and I just keep banging on the door of trying to follow some long-term development plan.
I love it. Like how near the end there you're talking about sitting in the locker room with a bunch of humble guys. I think parents need to, I'm looking at it from a parent perspective right now, parents need to understand that we need to be humble so our players can learn to be humble. I think it's very hard for the reason why you talked about this in your book, and that's why you're on today. It's to talk about, highlight some topics from your book. And that was one thing that resonated with me a lot, was near the end when you asked, why are they playing? And I think you touched about the parents and you touched about the players. And I think the only way our players will learn is by through their parents. And that humbling thing, it's a game changer on all levels. And that's a topic we can talk about in a little bit. And I'll ask a few questions about it because I think that's important. But let's start in right away with everything. As a parent, this is the hard thing, I think, for most people to be sitting on the sidelines and talking, is let's start right into it. The wins and losses and the lack of focus on development. I think as a parent, this is a critical problem we miss. And how do we approach this is very different here in the United States than the rest of the world. We don't have a soccer culture. We don't have a soccer community. So how do you try to teach parents that you work with on understanding the value of development over results at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think I'm uncomfortable sometimes saying parents. I always say it's the adults, whether that's coaches, because there are a lot of coaches that are certainly not angels. So I don't want to put it on the parents, because they do get blamed for a lot, and rightly so on some occasions. But I think it's the adults that that spoil the game for the children, and how we speak to them, or how we perceive that the game should be looking, and we don't even confront our child on what their thought process is. I just think we have a culture here that everybody loves winning, and if they don't win, it's who can we blame? Now, I think that's a terrible environment for a child to grow up in, because as soon as a child complains, their parent backs them up with it. Now, I certainly wouldn't be telling people how to parent the children, but if your child's complaining, I think the right thing to do is to give them a realistic picture of why did this happen? Why did you why did you experience this failure or this loss or this tough practice that you had that you weren't very good? How are you going to deal with that? So the culture of winning only, like, it really, really concerns me, because society is driven by success. You go on all these social media things and everyone's posting about how great everybody is. And it's just, for me, it's not reality, Ian. And I try and help the parents. Obviously, we speak to the parents. When we get together at the start of the year, we have an all-academy meeting where we explain what we do and how we expect our parents to behave. And we speak about long-term development plan, and we speak about having a game model. But coaches, I think, are under a lot of pressure to win games. I get loads of parents chatting to me when we win. But I've also had it in the past where these chatty parents, as soon as we lose, they won't speak to me. That's a terrible place for a coach to be in. Because now you're trying to find, as a coach, I don't want to be like kissing the parents' backsides, but I still want to be friendly. I still want them to know that I'm approachable. And if we do go away and I'm sat there having breakfast at the hotel, you can certainly come and sit with me and have breakfast with me. But I just think, because of this win at all costs and we're only happy when we're winning, a coach's life can be very lonely, because they know that the parents are only going to speak to them when they win. And then when they lose, it's his or her fault. I think that's a terrible culture for anybody to be in, and especially for our children to see that. They've just got to hear that message consistently of, hey, this is about long term. And I try and remind parents about one boy on my high school team. He's my best player. At U11 at FC Portland, he was on the third team. But he's my best player in high school now. We're long-term developers, aren't we? There's only the odd percentage who are just fantastic right from the off, and they're just talented, and not necessarily a lot of them have the right character, but they've got talent and they're just good. It's no effort to them. But I think the majority of us, 95% of us, have to work our tails off and keep fighting to develop. And we're all long-term developers. I was certainly better when I was 18 than when I was 13. I didn't play high school growing up, but I left high school at 15 and went straight playing with men. And then year after, ended up playing semi-professional. I wouldn't have dreamed of that at high school, because the teacher wouldn't pick me because I was tiny. But parents have to understand that everything for their child and for themselves is, it's long term, and you're always learning. That's the part that we don't have in our culture, of it's instant success. Where am I right now? Where are you right now? But you know that if you keep working hard, there's a process. You'll be better in 12 months. That's why I always tell my players when I take them, no player will ever get caught from my soccer team if I'm your coach the following year, because surely you will be better than when I first got you. So I'm going to continue with that and helping you grow. And why would I want to cut you where I've spent 12 months of working with you for a brand new player who I've got to try and help navigate what development is? I'd rather invest in that 12 months I've worked with you and make that a 2-year thing, make it a 3-year thing. But we just don't have that in our culture, which is, it's damaging the game. I think it's damaging the kids, but nobody does anything about it, Ian. But we all know about it, but no one's doing anything about it. And that's what triggered me to write the book.
This goes right into the other issue, is parents need to start understanding how to hold the clubs responsible. And I think you talked about it, and it's, parents need to understand that a club should have a long-term plan of development and what it is. How do we continuing down this path of development, how do we ask parents or convince parents to say, this may be a winning team? Are they cherry picking or do they actually have coursework for long-term development? Most coaches I talk to now, their club is either A, building a playbook for the coaches to work with, a long-term development plan for the coaches that will trickle down to the players for long-term development within the club. And I know that if you go to an MLS club, they have a game plan. It trickles down from the first team all the way down through the academy, especially for the top competitive teams. That may be more so for them than the third or fifth or 16th team in that age group. But at least that's how it is here. You look at the top teams, they're playing the same style as the first team. And parents need to be better equipped and ready to go ask these questions to the club. So how do you recommend them or encourage them to talk to the clubs about the long-term plan? Because I had this conversation with the parent and they laughed at me. I'm like, no club does that. And I'm like, the good clubs do. So how do you encourage or recommend parents to continue down this path?
I mean, wouldn't every parent want the child to play in an environment where there's a plan? You would think so, wouldn't you? I mean, that's like taking your child to elementary school and all the teachers are there. We don't know what we're doing. Oh, I do something different. There's no curriculum here. You would grab your child's hand and turn around and sign them up for another school. But in new sports, we accept that. The sad thing is, Ian, I think the majority of people don't care about whether you've got a plan or whether you put the person first or the athlete. People don't care about that. It's, do you win or do you have a fancy name? Are you playing in one of these acronym leagues? You could make up I could make up a league right now and call it, we've just joined XYZ. And the amount of people that will come and join, they'll have no idea what it is and they won't ask, but they'll come because it sounds good. So right. I always say to parents when they do leave, look, it's no problem. If you don't want to be here, you shouldn't be here. But always make sure whatever club you join, reach out to the director and say, do you have a development plan for my child and can I come and see it? Some people ask me to email it and I'm not throwing our plan out all over email. I'll sit with you and I've got hard copies and I'll show it to you. But I think that's a question that should be asked. Do you have a plan for my child and can I see it? And now you can base your decision on whether you want to join that club on their answer. Because a lot of people say they have one, but they don't. A lot of people do have one, but they're not brave enough to implement it. When I've been on my A license, the amount of people that are like asking me, can we use your game model? Because we don't have one at our club. That blew me away. Obviously, all the coaches that were on the license that coach at the professional clubs, they all had one, but some of them said, oh, we've got one, but it just looks good, we don't use it. So it's having one's good, but are you implementing it? That's the most important thing. And implementing it, Ian, is so hard. It is so hard. Even me with the staff that we've got, the people are the most important things if you want to build a culture. And the people we have here at the club, I trust them all now. We've got great people. But I know that I have to be patient in implementing this plan or game model. We're all rowing in the same direction. So it is difficult. But people will say they believe in it. But executing it is the most important part.
I agree with you there. You brought up, I listened to an interview by Damien Hughes. I don't know if you recognize the name. He wrote The Barcelona Way. And he talked about in the early 2000s when Barcelona was rebuilding with Pep and with him at the time and taking the risk on him being a no-name coach, just a coach within the club. And they were trying to build a culture where their motto exemplifies what the club was doing. And this is where Damien actually talks quite a bit about was how if people weren't willing to buy into it, from coaches to players, they got rid of them.
Yeah.
And the mantra was, more than a club, we are a community. We are about the community. We're playing for the community. We're playing for the club. That's what this is about. We aren't playing for ourselves. We're playing for the fans that support us, the community around us. And that's what the motto is. It's more than a club. And I found that interview that he did and listening to him talking about that, I think parents don't truly understand that. It's not about the wins and losses. Because once they adapted this mentality, they became a force to be reckoning with, a culture that is unheard of. And their development in their through their program, you're still seeing it today, almost 20 plus years later from the day that they started this process. And
culture and being together in a team setting is everything. We always talk about doing the tiny things. And I talk about that with my players. If you can't do those small things well, we've no chance. But I think when you do have a plan, a game model, all your decisions can be made from that. Where I loved bringing in a game model to FC, not to be like, oh, look what we're doing. This looks fun. I want to see who's on board. And the amount of pushback you can get from coaches, that kind of blew me away, because I was a coach going coaching at a club, and I sat down and the director come to me and said, here's our plan. I would love that. But it gives you something, you can relate to something. So anything that goes on the field or in developing a player, you've got something to fall back on. And then obviously when things don't work out, I've been in the role now, this is going to be my sixth year, we've done four game models, because my first one was just the ramblings of a madman. And then it's that doesn't work. That's too much information. It's like 100 pages. And I'm like, I've gone too far with that one. And then you do the second one, and then you start talking to staff. So now we've had our fourth one for 2 years now, and we've not tweaked it that much, because it's, oh, this is a good one that we can carry on building from our principles of play. And this is set now. Obviously, we'll keep tweaking it. But I say to the coaches, if we're not following it and we're rowing in the same direction, we can't tweak it if we're not trying to stick into the process of how we think players should be developed. So the coaches, I know we have 35 coaches here, and I know they're all at different levels of learning. So that's where I've got to be patient, and I've got to get out there, and I've got to help them.
I think that's where parents have to take the step back and not just see the table, the record of the team, and where they sit in it. Because I think parents automatically associate, if this team is winning, especially in the younger ages, I think it's becomes more transparent in the older ages, because they actually have to play the game. They just can't muscle their way through it and be bigger, faster, stronger. They actually have to have the IQ. They have to have the technical skill, and they have to have the tactical skills to actually play the game, versus where parents just see, oh, this team's winning, I'm going to jump to this team. I don't know how many times we see kids at tryouts and they're just bouncing because they want a team that's winning.
You look at a player, Ian, who's 14. Any player in the US who's 14, if they've not quit soccer, I bet if you said, take me through the clubs when did you start playing? I was six. Take me through the clubs you went through. I bet you would get five or six clubs they've already been to. I think that's right. I think the key is, for a parent, is find the right environment, which club has a reputation of developing, which club actually thinks about the person first, other than the athlete. And which club is, they're not obsessed with winning. They're not posting all over that they're winning. Find that environment for your child and their sports life. They'll be talking about their sports life for a long time. And then when these children have children, hopefully they're going to put their child through that kind of same environment. But if a child grows up with a parent saying, oh, you're losing, let's jump. Or you're on the B team, let's jump. Or this team's losing now, let's jump. How do we think those children are going to raise their children? It's probably going to be on the same path.
And it's about breaking that streak. Sorry for interrupting.
No, I'm certainly not the perfect dad. My kids will tell you that. But I'm really opposite of a helicopter parent. And sometimes I've realized that I've gone too far where my kids actually want me to go and watch them play. But I purposely say, look, I'm your taxi driver. I drop you off. I might sit and read a book. I want you to navigate your sports experience by yourself. And so, you know, I was talking to my daughter today because I dropped her off because she's got a softball tournament in Medford, which is 5 hours away. And then she was like, oh, Dad, I'd see you come to one of my games this season. And I'm like, oh, and you know what I'm like, honey? I want you to do it. And I said, but if you want me to come, I'll come. And I don't think that's good for them, what I'm doing. But I'm that paranoid about ruining that experience for them. I just said, no, I want you to navigate your own sports experience. Listen to your coaches. Sometimes you're going to play for a coach that you're not keen on. As long as it's not an abusive environment, we stay and we keep working. My kids are oblivious to tryouts and jumping to any club because that's just not what I do with them. I have pulled my son from a toxic baseball environment because it was affecting his mental health. The club's telling him that if he leaves, he won't become an MLB player, which is absolute nonsense. And he believed that. And he's like, Dad, I've got to stay. I want to play him in MLB. And I'm like, how about your goal is get on varsity for high school when you go to high school? What about that for a goal? They're talking absolute nonsense to you. So I had to convince him that the environment wasn't good for him because his mental health was being affected. But that's the only time I've stepped in.
I think we as parents have to take the step back and realize it's their life. We can live vicariously through them, but we have to do it standing away.
Yeah.
We can't live it for them. I think this is where it's very hard for parents to separate. I know that I struggle with it because I talk to my son's coaches. I talk to coaches. This is what I do on a daily basis. Yeah. And it's very easy to have my friendship might affect his relationship with a coach down the line. And it's something that I think about on a daily basis. Will my podcast sway a coach to put Landon in a spot that he's not ready for, or they're mad at me because something I said, and now they're going to use him against me. Yeah. And I think we as parents have to take a step back, but we need to be asking the right questions. And this is looking at it from the parenting perspective, is trying to see it through their eyes, not so much our own. And I think all we do see as adults, let's put it in the right way, like you said earlier, we see it through our perspective, our lenses, yeah, and not the child's. And I think one of the best things I've ever seen was talking to a coach, and he gives his players homework.
Right.
And in the homework, it's to watch a game, and he wants to see what they're seeing.
Mm.
And I'm like, you're giving too much freedom here. Have them all watch the same game,
yeah,
and see how they all see the same game from a different scope. And he goes, but the thing is, they may not all have access to the same game. I go, trust me, if you need a game film, let me know. I can ask. I know connections. And I go, we'll get you a game film, and you all can watch the same game and see what you all see and see how much it varies from player to player. And they said, I might have to take you up on that. But I think as a parent, I'm taking a step back because I'm letting my kid learn from the coach, not me. I'll be honest. Like I tell everyone, I don't have a soccer background. Mm. Everything I've learned really about soccer has been the last 5 years. And your book hits on so many different topics. I agree with 99.9% what you said in the book. There's that 0.9 because that's the parent in me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fight back on certain topics.
Yeah, that's fine.
And we'll touch on that because this is where I have to learn as an individual because I have to take a step back, just like you did with your kids, taking a step back. Your son, the one thing I've learned about sports in general, it's not the most talented that make it the farthest. It's the ones that can survive the game. I'm going to use a quote from Soccer Dave. We need to teach the kids how to survive the game today so they can survive the sport tomorrow.
Yeah, the mental aspect,
yes,
is the high.
And the business side of the game. And I don't think kids truly are ready for that at 16 years old. But if we can prep them to understand of how to play with that little ball at their foot every day and be successful doing that, when they become mature enough to handle the sports side of the game, the mental side, the business side, we're setting them up for success. And it's not the most talented players that make it. It's the ones that can survive that had parents like you taking the step back and letting their kids guide through the problem.
You think about it, Ian, if there's a couple of things. If you're having your child work with a coach that you think, oh, if I upset him or her, they're going to punish my child. Why are you having your child with someone like that? Because sometimes when I've had parents to me being like, oh, I've got a problem, but I'm worried that you might punish him or you might punish her. And I'd be like, really? I've given you that impression. That's the kind of person I am. You shouldn't be here. You should know that I can talk to you about anything. Your child will certainly not get punished. And then on another thing, if you're helicoptering your parent and you want them to be successful and you want them to reach the top, by being a helicopter parent and solving the problems, I can guarantee they won't get to the top. You're actually damaging them from reaching dreams that they want, which is fine, but it can't be the dream of the parent. I couldn't care less if my son plays MLB or not. He does. But sometimes I'll question what you're doing today. Do you think someone who wants to play MLB will be sat on his phone all day on the sofa playing games? Probably not. And he'd be like, oh, Dad, leave me alone. I went, no, I'm just giving you a reality. I couldn't care less if you made MLB. Just giving you a reality check. I trained for hours and hours a day because I loved it first and I wanted to try and play at the highest level I could. I didn't have a obsession about playing professional. It would have been nice if I did. I didn't. But I trained because I loved it. And I knew if I trained hard, I would probably reach the highest level I possibly could, that my ability would allow me. But if a parent is always solving the problems for them, always reaching out to the coach when things go wrong, do you really think that your child's going to reach the top by doing that? I'll tell you right now, it's a no. I've emailed a coach twice in my life, and those two times I've shown the email to my son and said, right, here's what I'm saying. What do you think? And on one occasion he went, no, I'll leave it. And I went, okay. And on another one he went, yeah, send it. That's okay. And that's it. I've done it twice. But I asked him, and I think that's where we're going wrong. We're trying to do it for them. I listened to a great sports psychologist, Bill Bezick, and he said it perfectly. He said, we love our children too much. And then you're like, that's kind of weird. I love my kids. And then when he starts explaining it, we jump in to solve problems before they've even attempted it themselves. And I've been guilty of that with my kids. I think we all have. But sometimes I've got to check myself and be like, whoa. I'll walk past the litter tray and it'll be full and no one's done it for days. And I'll get on my knees and I'll be like, hold on, I didn't want the cats. What am I doing? And then I just walk out and say, right, do the litter tray. Where I was going to do it. And I'm like, well, no, that's not good. I'm doing it. I said, I don't want any cats. But I'm doing the litter tray and feeding them every morning.
I totally understand that as a parent. I had nothing against my parents. My parents were very – I was one of six kids. And we didn't grow up in a socially economic family, like being in a large family. And so whoever was the oldest boy at home got a lot of the chores at home. And I fell at that a very young age of about 12 and maybe a little bit younger. And my oldest brother moved out and he is 8 years older than me.
Right.
And so when he was 18, I was 10. I started to mow the yard at 8 years old. And we had a push mower for 2 acres of property, and it wasn't self-propelled. And it, I mean, my parents' house had a basement in New York, and it had sat on top of a little hill because of the basement. And so you literally would mow all around the house, and you're mowing up and down a hill all day long. And it would take me 2 days to do it. My dad would get mad at me, but my dad never mowed the yard for me, never did any of that stuff. He had me do it. And now, me as an adult, I've compensated so much the other direction for my kids. My wife goes, you need to take a step back. They have to learn how to do all this stuff. And I've been much better at household things. My son now helps me mow the yard, has been helping me mow the yard. If he's available, if there's not something going on, he'll come out and help use the push mower. I'll let him weed every now and then, just because I find that to be a little bit more dangerous than mowing. Yeah. And I'll let him weed some areas of the property, but I won't let him do too much because the battery dies and they aren't gas powered anymore. And things along that line, it's just a matter of time. But at the same time, I have to constantly remind myself. When it comes to his soccer, I think I do a much better job. It's not my job to handle things. I tell him, if you have an issue with your coach, you go talk to him. Mm. If there's something if you can't get through to him, we can have the three of us can have a conversation. Mm-hmm. It's not just going to be me and him. It will be the three of us. And I think we've taken this approach probably since he's been about 8. He's 11 now. Yeah. But there are still things that we do as parents. We still make sure that we double check with him that his jersey's packed. If we're running late, we'll help get the jersey and all that stuff put together for him. But he still has to double check everything before we walk out the doors, which means he's pulling his whole entire soccer bag out and making sure it's there. Mm-hmm. And we aren't looking in it. He's looking in it and just confirming what we're asking. I mean, he's 11, but my 7-year-old daughter, on the other hand, has seen this her whole life now, and she just does it on her own.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the second child gets the benefit of the older child's.
The second child, Ian, and that she's a girl. I think in my experience, I've got 3 girls and 2 boys. The girls have listened a little bit better than the boys have.
They mature a little bit faster.
Yes. Yeah.
But looking at it from the perspective, I think my favorite came from a podcast, and that was Down the Tunnel. I can't remember who Keen was talking to. And it was a player packed 2 left cleats. He packed his brother's left cleat. They wore the same size cleats. And the parents like, oh, I'll go home again. He goes, no, he's wearing the left cleat the whole game. He has to learn to pack his bag correctly.
Yeah.
And the kid never forgot. Whoever he was interviewing, Keen was interviewing, the player never forgot his cleats again.
Yeah.
He remembered them. And I find it funny, you hear parents, oh, my kid forgot their shin guards. Oh, I'm going to go buy him a new pair down the road.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nope.
I've had that.
He either borrows one from someone else or he doesn't play. As much as it makes me mad that he forgot it, that's a conversation we can have in the car.
Yeah. I had that once where one of my players, he forgot his cleats. The dad said, oh, I'll go to Dick's and buy him a pair. And I said, no, you won't. He's not playing. And our goalkeeper was decent on outfield. And so our goalkeeper said, hey, he can borrow mine the first half, and then he can go in goal the second half, and he can wear my sneakers. So I'm like, okay. So I put that to him, and he was like, I'm not going in goal. And I went, wow. So not only have you forgot your cleats, you've got a goalkeeper there that's saying you can borrow his, but only for the first half, and you're refusing. And he's like, yeah. Okay, you'll not get any game time. And then he sat on the bench and was complaining about how the guys were playing. So I looked around and I said, hey, yes, we're not playing well. It shouldn't be coming from you, bud. That's for sure. I said, you cannot say anything about the performance. And he was our best player. But I said, you got to learn from this. The dad was distraught that his son wasn't playing. And I was like, no, it's a lesson for him. I can't put him on the field if this is what he's done. And he's mourning about how they're performing. That's ridiculous. He's got a few life lessons he's got to learn here. That his goalkeeper was willing to help him out, and he refused that. Then he sits on the bench and whines about how they perform. He's had to learn like three valuable life lessons here of this is not what you do.
Right. Going back to what you said about the parent was in distraught. I think parents become distraught over it because of they're living vicariously too much through their kid. When Landon was injured this past year, we told him, you're still going to all your games. You're still wearing your jersey. I know that you're on crutches and a knee brace, but you can still go out and help. You can ask coach what you can do to help.
Yeah.
And so he sat there, and it's the most I've ever seen him talk on this. He was standing up and help coaching and trying to be part of the game still. And I was very proud of him. And I'm like, let's see how long this continues. As soon as he was able to put his boots back on and go out back out there and play, he's never done it again. He's been subbed off.
But that's so good for him. But all the players that are injured for me, I say to them, look, I want you to come out. I'll print off the session plan of what we're doing. And you can stand by my side and I'll give you the plan and then I'll explain to you what we're doing, why we're doing it, and what the principles are and what I'm looking for. And it helps them too with their injury because being injured sucks if you're not playing.
Right.
But they love it. They stand by me and I ask them when the exercise is going, I'm like, hey, what do you think? And they were like, oh, yeah, I understand why you're doing all this. So it helps them. I became a better soccer player when I started coaching. Because when I started coaching, I was like, oh, shoot, I've been practicing wrong for 15 years.
That's exactly what I've been telling my son. I go, I tell everyone, I think once you become about 10 years old, I think every player, my wife suggested it years ago, at 8 years old, that they should start mentoring kids 2 years younger than them, starting at eight. So they go out and work on the field with a bunch of 6 years olds because they can actually still relate to them better than the 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And have that mentoring program. And it also makes the club more family friendly, more family oriented and closer. And you have kids changing their perspective. Our coach here was telling me about that. At 17, he was coaching 20-something years old, and was playing still, and it completely changed because I got the cheat book. I got the cheat sheet for the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved moving into coaching, and then it made me so much better. And this, we have our young coaches here helping out with our junior academy. So they're caught the players in the club. Are coaching these young players and we mentor them, we try and help them, but they love it. But it's funny, we love it, but sometimes you've still got to give these volunteer coaches that play in your club, you've got to give them a little bit of tough love sometimes where they'll come and then they're helping out, but they're juggling.
Right.
And it's like, whoa, what are you doing? You're not here to work on your juggles with us. You're here to help. That's one of my pet peeves with coaches when they're at the session and the coach is juggling. I'm like, what are you doing?
I know coaches that jump into it with the players and they'll get to see who can juggle the longest. And once the last player drops the ball, and normally the players are trying to cheat to get the coach to lose. So I've seen that happen with the younger ages. It's always fun to watch because they're trying to make sure their teammate wins versus the coach who should win. As we're going through this development process, and this is a topic I know it's not in the same where we've been talking about, but parents on the sideline, I was actually rereading something I wrote several years ago, and it was talking about, I wrote it just like this. I said, parents need to shut the hell up on the sideline. And I am probably one of the more guilty parties of this next question is how do we better educate parents on being more tactful and respectful on the sidelines when it comes to officials, because I know our kids pick up on it. So if we aren't being respectful to the officials, our kids won't be. I have made some pretty snide remarks talking to my kid loud enough for the officials to hear. It's one of the games where my son ended up leaving because he got a cleat to the chest by the keeper, and the official called the foul on him. He had his feet planted on the ground, was ready to kick at the goal, the ball into the goal, and the goalie came out, spikes up into his chest. And before that, about 2 minutes before that happened, I said, Landon, you can't fix trash. Play the game that you're given. And one of the parents goes, that doesn't help the kids. I go, what doesn't help the kids is watching them swipe each other's ankles out from each other. I don't care what team you're on. They need to call my son for two-hand shoving kids to the ground because the ref is not calling it. I even yelled, number 18, call him. He's two-hand shoving kids to the ground. It's my child. I'm telling him to call a foul on, and he blatantly refused to.
Yeah, I'm sure your son doesn't like hearing you shouting. It's hard. It's emotional.
You don't care if it's a handball. It's when it becomes a safety concern.
Yeah. I don't care.
That's where I lose my mind.
I don't care about any of that. I'm always on this mindset. All right, you've had a bad call. What are we going to do about it?
Right, you miss a call. That's fine. I'm saying where it starts escalating.
Or if kids are tackling from behind, that's where I get frustrated.
Yeah. It is.
If someone cleats my son in the nose, I'm still going to be like, okay, what are you going to do about it? I don't know. That's just probably my upbringing. And I actually like it when it does get a little bit rough.
I think rough for the right age.
Yeah.
You tend to hand shoves from behind. It's not acceptable. Yeah. U16, you can get away with it a little bit more. U18. But that's my thing, especially with my kids causing the foul. I want him to play a clean game. And if the ref's not going to call it, and I know that he's escalating it, I've seen a center back in a game completely level a kid, and the ref didn't call it, and it was not by any means clean. Yeah. It was shoulder drop. The kid went flying about 5 feet, and nothing was called.
Yeah.
And that's what bothers me.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, there's a bigger problem here. Is I know we need referees, but we go down this path of we need referees. We'll get anybody in, even if they don't understand the rules. These referees go on these courses. There's no tough love given out to them. There's no accountability. My son passed a referee course. He's ready to referee. He doesn't even know all the rules. And I'm like, how have you passed? And then I go and watch him. And when he's doing it, he'd come off and I'm like, hey, a little bit of jogging won't go amiss. And he's like, oh. And he's like, come on, Dad. I went, look, these guys won't care about whether you get a call wrong. What they care about is, are you putting effort in? So running up and keeping up with play, I think we need to start there. But we've got a massive problem now in Oregon where this is how we've done it. We've put in these people on the field that are not qualified to do it, and they're really young. They're getting these calls wrong. Parents are getting emotional. Now parents are yelling at them. What are we expecting to happen? And I said to the state organization, that's like me hiring coaches who are terrible, letting them coach a team and saying to the parents, come on, give me a break. It's my fault because I've brought these people in.
Yeah. And I read all the reffing forums. I'm in a lot of them, and I get that it's learning on the job. Now, it used to not be that way, from my understanding, talking to some older refs. You learned more on your way up. So you might go rec, and this is another problem we have, is that we don't have the rec organizations like we used to for these officials to get their bearings, where it's parents aren't super crazy. They just want their kids to have fun playing the game. They aren't saying they're screaming. They know their kids are just learning to play the game. And they learn how to call the game there and learn to gain experience and learn to be confident. And I've talked to many organizations here in the Metroplex that are part of rec associations. And the number one thing they tell all their officials, just be confident. No one's going to mess with you if you make a confident call. It's when you're lacking that confidence and you're hesitating on what the call is. And when I was coaching, I would always, when we played indoors, I got to know the officials very well because you have the same four or five. And when you had an A and B team, you had 16 games a season, and we would play three indoor seasons a year. So you came across these officials all the time. And I flat out told them, like, if you need someone to be made an example of because the other coach is a complete jerk, let me know. I'll make a complete fool of myself. You kick me out. Just let me watch my kid on the other side. But you can kick me out. I'll make sure this coach will be shaking in their boots when they're done. Because at the end of the day, it's about making sure that you feel safe on this court from the parents on the other side and me. And it's like, I did feel bad calling that referee trash.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when my son was leveled and then he turns around, wasn't doing a call anything, and he's on the ground grabbing his chest, and everyone's like telling him to stop play, both parents on both sides. It's stop play. Mm. You don't know what's wrong. And it's, he had no confidence.
No.
If he just went out there with a little bit of confidence, I think that parents would treat him completely different. I always love the refs that come over and say, look, I've refed for a year. I'm not doing get everything correct. Just give us a break. Guess what? I don't say a peep those games.
Yeah.
It's more of cracking jokes. Like he came over and he made some comment when he made his comment to us about, oh, I can be louder because you have no voice today. And he turns around and goes, I'm Batman. And I've never laughed so hard.
Yeah.
In my life, and during the whole game, like moments, you'd hear parents saying, I'm Batman, just trying to get him to laugh. And it just changed. Even though there were some bad calls by the ARs, no one cared because the official made everyone feel welcomed and made sure everyone know, like, this is my standard. I'm not going to hold to it. If you don't like it, you're gone. And yeah. I think it shouldn't come from the top. It should be coming from the local area to set those standards. And
yes.
And looking at what U.S. soccer has just done for referee abuse, I am very scared that as parents will see this and that you're going to have these officials have one word or one uproar from a parent and they're going to just clear the benches on the sidelines and parents will all be kicked out because this official, as horrible as it sounds, has an ego issue and doesn't want to deal with it.
Yeah. By posting that, there definitely is a divide between the coach, a referee, and a parent. There's generally in the society we have, there's no team with those three. So the referee's already walking on the field. If they're young, they've got fear of, well, parents are going to start, the coach going to start. If they're old, they've got this chip on the shoulder and it's start with me and I'm ready for you. So the environment is just, it's just poor. And I always say, when the referees show up to me, I always say, hey, do your best. And the young referees look at me as though I'm crazy because I'm being respectful to them. And and I'm like, can you not speak to me? And I'm like, do your best, make the call. I couldn't care less if it's right or wrong, but make a call. And watching how they react to someone just talking to them. We have signs up on our field, respect the officials. I did a video where the parents, I had to send a video out to the club and our parents were berating not only the ref, but a kid who was overweight. And I'm like, that's absolutely disgusting behavior. And if I find anybody doing that, you'll be kicked out of the club. Is that what we've come to, where we're berating an opposition player who's a little bit overweight? What is going on here?
Right. I don't know, as parents, my kid will now say, I'm just a child. Leave me alone. There was one game he made a bad throw in. I don't know what he did. He did the throw in and the ball went weird. And I think it went backwards. Like he lost his grip on the ball. It was rainy that day and they called him chicken arms. And they kept on teasing and cursing at my son. And I finally went up and found the local person. Like, look, I am to the point where I don't want to have interactions with these parents. I'm up walking because I'm about to go get in an altercation, a verbal altercation. I'm like, I won't hit anyone, but I will defend a child. And I don't care if it's my child or some other child on their team. If they're going to be picking on, I don't care. Kids don't deserve, no matter what the age is, as long as they're minors, they don't deserve to be talked to in this manner. And he came over and watched. And at halftime, the official did have a talking with the assigner. And there's more to the behind story of this referee, but parents were removed for harassing kids on the field. From both, they're harassing their players on their team and players on my son's team. And I don't find harassing kids. I won't say barely anything if the ref looks like they're a minor, because at the end of the day, they're just learning and they are trying to do their best. But I will have a chat with the assigner afterwards. Like, I know they're kids, but why are they reffing a final for a tournament?
Yeah.
Like, these are the ones where you want your best people. Mm. or you let them be an AR where they can learn and watch from whoever the mentor is in the center. If there's someone in the middle, like I'm not doing a say like this person doesn't deserve this opportunity, but they have to grow into it. Just like our kids, we don't put them on the top team if they're not ready for a top team. It would be like putting my 10-year-old into the MLS. Good luck. Go have fun.
Well, I've got to behave with referees anyway, because my daughter, she's a professional ref in the UK. So I've got to behave myself anyway, because she'll put me straight. If I ever get sent off or anything like that, she'll definitely get me on the right path.
I think that's where we as parents have to sit down and have a real conversation. That's something that I had Brian Barlow. And I was like, I always say I'm a cheeseburger in recovery, because he calls us parents that misbehave cheeseburgers on the sideline, because he can't call them anything else. And I think that I think there's a fine line in our society now where there's not enough in the middle, and everything's so polarized. It's so far to the extremes. Mm-hmm. And as parents, we have to be better educated. I sit there and talk to one of the parents now. And it's like, how does the official, what's your view on this? Because he's an actual official. And I've done all my coursework. I've done everything. I actually, during COVID, I got qualification done during that time frame, because games were being canceled because they weren't getting refs. And I didn't want to show up to a game and have my kids' games canceled because there's no officials. Mm-hmm. But now, all I do is read. Like, it's to the point where I'm watching I joke, it's like the first thing, I don't read my corporate email anymore. I read the Law of the Game app.
Right.
I go and read their daily question and watch whatever video they have on social media, because as a parent, the best tool I have is to be better educated.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Ian. A lot of people that are shouting at the refs don't know the rules.
I yell obstruction.
you'll see a good tackle going in, and then they'll be like, that's a card. And you're like, what are you talking about? Yeah, it's hard, because it is emotional. And because of this culture of winning, that's why the sidelines are like they are, because everything's about winning. I always say, you can sit in a parking lot and watch your family walk off the field, and you've not watched the game, but I can tell you who's won and who's lost by the reaction of the parent. They're high-fiving, they're hugging the kid, and you're like, oh, they won. The other one's 15 yards in front, turning around, saying, hurry up, and this all is so obvious.
I think that's one of my favorite points now walking off the field, is when I'm able to collect my child. You can say, I put my arm around him, say, I love you, I'm proud of you, and let's get to the car. And I think that's the most important thing we as parents can do, is let them talk about it. And me as a parent, I've done enough talking to enough smarter people than me. And that's the big thing now I'm trying to get my son to do, is his journaling. Yeah. And it's the reflection of his games, his reflection of training for the week. And he's 11, but if he starts doing this now, and this goes back to where we talked about development, it is giving them a chance to reflect. Mm. And if they ever put in there, I always said, I hope he never writes in there, my dad yelled too much at the officials in the game. So it's like a motivation on the sideline.
That would crush you if you saw that.
Yes. Or if I'm recording a video and I'm sending it to my wife or a family member or a friend, or I'm recording it for his social media account, and I hear myself talking or yelling. I don't mind myself talking to the parent next to me. It is screaming at the officials. I've learned having to have a camera in my hand makes me very quiet, because I don't want it to be heard. I've realized as a parent, like when it comes to the officials, we also have to be developed. And the best advice I was given recently was, go find that parent on the sideline that you admire, if it's on your team or another team, and buy them a cup of coffee and figure out what they've learned. And they said, I guarantee it's going to be a family that's 1 or 2 years older than you, your player, and sit down and have a conversation and ask them, how do they stay calm? How do they stay? And they told me, they guarantee me it's time. By the time they hit U13, most parents need to learn to relax, because at that point, it is a different game. I mean, it's a different game a little bit earlier than that, in my opinion, but it is more serious. It's more critical. It is more for that individual player. And parents just learn like they have no control.
Yeah, and it should
by that point of time.
It should be fun for everybody. And I always say, if you drive into the field and you're anxious and you're desperate for your child to win, I suggest dropping them off and then leaving. Don't watch. This is last week, my daughter was playing and I was talking to a few parents on the sideline, and it's great because I can be a dad. I'm on the sideline and I'm talking, and she scored the winning goal, and one parent went, "Oh my gosh, you've just missed a goal." And I said, "I don't care." And she's like, "What?" I'm like, "I don't care. I'm just ready to take her home when the game's over." And then the coach is funny. She works here at the club full time, and she saw me talking. And then she said to Ali after the game, "Oh, great job." And then she's like, "I don't think your dad saw it." So she like really stitched me up. So when we got in the car, I went, "Oh, good job, honey." I said, "Good goal." She went, "You didn't see it." And I'm like, "How do you know?" And I'm like, "No, I didn't see it. But you know what I'm like." And then she's like, "Coach Sharon said that." So I said to Sharon after, "Wow, is your post-game talk like your dad's horrible? He didn't see it." So we were laughing. But yeah, it's like, I didn't see it, but it doesn't. Like I say, I'm kind of weird like that. I'm just opposite of, look, I'm just ready to take you home. I hope you had a great time with your mates, and I hope you learned something. Let's go and get an ice cream or something.
And I think parents need to take the step back. I think when Landon was younger, I coached him. So it was very hard because I was actively involved. And I was one of the co-coaches for the team. There was both two parents coaching. And my role was to talk to them on the bench. So if they were off, if he was off the field, my back was normally turned to the field, or I'm turning to the field, talking to the players on trying to get their attention long enough, because they're 5 and 6 years old, to explain something for 30 seconds. Yeah. And that's all I knew I had their attention for, and to get them psyched to go back in about 3 minutes. And looking at it from that perspective, I enjoyed coaching more because I didn't have to pay attention. Like, it was not my job to pay attention to all the details. My job was to make sure the players were doing what they needed to be doing on the field. Mm. It's 4v4. It's very simple.
Yeah.
But it's complex for them, and it's breaking things down for them.
Yeah.
And looking at it from that perspective, and it's very hard. And I think we get caught up in the moments. We get caught up in, like you said, like you missed the winning goal. As a parent, I always tell them, like, I don't care what happens to the end results. I care how hard you work on that field. I need you to come off that field exhausted. Like, you spent every energy and you can't go play another game in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Or an hour.
Yeah, I've always said, Ian, that would be great as a coach to walk off from a 2-1 loss and a parent say, "Wow, coach, that was a great effort by the team."
That's all you can ask for.
Hey, everyone. I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch with Jason. He has done a lot in this book, and we just touch a smidgen of it in each episode. So this is a 2-part series. I'm going to give my final opinion at the end of episode 2, but go buy his book. Go support what he's trying to do. It's a great book, great read. He did a great job. And then you can join in this discussion on all the social media forums that are out there.
Hey, everyone. If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.